Ron Hextall would know not to pick a fight with Felix Potvin.
And Potvin and Hextall are going to go, I know Felix doesn't think this is a good idea.
In the same way that you would think the Leafs would be able to beat an opposing team if they had a team employee playing in net for said team.
David Ayers, the Carolina Hurricanes surround him and defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs 6-3.
And you're listening to, you would think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast.
We are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. And if you're watching our YouTube video, search You Would Think at YWT Podcast, you'll know that I am joined by the one, the only, Mr. Kevin Durso. How are you, buddy? Good. It's good to be back. And when I say back, I'm talking about back. Because if you don't know, You Would Think is back to every week. Yeah. Mike, you can put in a little applause break here if you want. We're back to every week because another bit of news that I'm not going to bury the lead here. The Flyers play their exhibition game in 9 days. What? It's crazy. Okay, so we're going to get into that. Before we do, hit the socials at YWT Podcast, or You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers Podcast. You search us, we pop up, you follow us. There we go. Kevin's at Kevin_Durso. Okay, so since I mentioned it just there, do you just want to get into the pre-postseason game here, the exhibition game?
Season game, the exhibition in July.
The exhibition game in July, and the very first NHL game back, the very first moment we watch NHL hockey with no fans in the crowd, other than Florida Panthers games, the first time we hear all these questions about, can we hear the players? Can we hear the coaches? All those questions will be answered next Tuesday, July 28th at 4 p.m. when the Philadelphia Flyers face off against the Pittsburgh Penguins. What? That's how we start? Come on, man. The NHL is doing a phenomenal job with this return to play. Change my mind. You can't do it.
I was even going to say, I don't know if you're like me with this, but the fact that it is the first game back of all of them.
The first game back.
It just sets the tone so well, you know, like, and they did a really good job with the regional aspect of a lot of those preseason games or whatever you want to call them, I guess, pre-postseason games.
Like they got as many rivalries as they could jam-packed in there, and then Tampa played Florida, but whatever.
Yeah, but what better way to get the juices flowing when it comes to, you know, this is supposed to be a ramp up to
Edmonton and Calgary? Come on.
Right.
Come on.
Think about it. Pittsburgh's going to play this game, and then they've got to play a playoff series.
They sure do.
They go right into the playoffs. That's the way it's going to work. It's not the same thing for everybody, obviously. You know, the Flyers are going to get three games that test where they are, and it's not that big of a deal if they win or lose all of them, per se. But
it'll be interesting to see how that changes how teams prepare for those exhibition games. You know, do the Flyers submit a different lineup than maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins do, just in terms of opening day talent, shall we say?
Yeah, and I'd say yes and no, probably, because yes, you want to get the regulars out there for a game. You got to get a feel for it at some point.
Right.
But you say no because of the fact that, you know, Alain Vigneault has kind of said all along since phase three started, he's going to look at everybody in some capacity.
Why wouldn't you?
No reason, yeah, exactly. There's no reason not to. I don't know if you're going to do it against, you know, do you do it in a game that completely doesn't count for anything other than to warm everybody up?
And to beat the Penguins, because come on.
Well, but that one game matters so much for the other ones that actually have some sort of meaning. I mean, you're not going to sit Claude Giroux in a game against Pittsburgh that means nothing if it's the only tune-up he gets before you play Boston for real, Tampa for real, Washington for real, and then playoffs.
Have they announced any sort of extended roster for that game specifically? I know all the teams are carrying a bunch of extra forwards and stuff like that, but are they going to be able to dress extra players for that game specifically?
It's funny because I had thought that the impression I got was that everybody who's been in camp the Flyers so far is going to make the trip, with the exception of there's a handful. I think they brought 34 total players.
Yeah, very few cuts, honestly. They pretty much know their guys.
In that sense. But they didn't make it seem like there had to be any cuts really to be made because of the goalie number. Like, they had 30 skaters and four goalies, and it was like, well, we can take them all. It sounded like. And then AV alluded to, well, there's guys we have to cut, or there's guys who aren't going to be on the trip, and we have to look at as many people as we can in this time. So he wanted to mix up lines in training camp and things like that. So the fact that there even is a cut that needs to be made, that would indicate to me that they're taking a very exclusive group, that there's not much to interchange here. You know, you're going to probably see most of the same guys, and it'll be a handful of guys who don't really play at there. You know, you got four games to figure it all out. And I don't know how many changes you're going to see in those four games. You're going to see a little bit, you know, like AV already mentioned, Brian Elliott's getting a start somewhere in here. And that makes a lot of sense.
That makes a ton of sense.
I wouldn't be surprised, given what we found out this week about Shane Gostisbehere and the fact that he had to have another surgery somewhere over the course of this whole process, that he may not play all four. But, you know,
I'd be hard pressed to say he's not getting into at least a couple.
Yeah. I was thinking two out of the four he'll play.
Although, honestly, at this point, looking at the roster that they put out the other day, if Phil Myers is indeed healthy like we expect him to be, and he's at 100%, is Shane Gostisbehere one of the six best Flyers defensemen?
Probably not. And I don't say that to say he's
not. And that's not disparaging about Ghost. I've said some pretty disparaging things about him on this show. These aren't one of them. But honestly, at this point, I know that Robert Hagg is not a particularly popular player among, shall we say, fans on social media.
Right.
right now, would you rather have Robert Hagg or Shane Gostisbehere in your lineup? And I think before, if you asked 18 months ago, you'd laugh at me for saying that. Mm-hmm. Now, I think a lot of fans would say Robert Hagg after the season that both players had.
Well, I think the other thing to remember is that if you're going to construct your defensive pairings, I don't think anybody's changing the top four. You know, I think everybody likes the top four. It's Provorov, Niskanen, it's Sanheim, Myers, and I don't think anybody is going to change that. So what do you have left among the grouping there? And when you look at what you have left, there's a likeness to putting Justin Braun on the right side. You'd like the right-handed defenseman and having three of them to put on each pairing. So the fact that you do – now you have to pick between Hag or Ghost, and which one do you take? And who's been the more consistent guy throughout the year? It's been Hag.
You gotta
give him that.
And something that we talked about when Gostisbehere was kind of at the height of his struggles is the fact that he is at his most effective when he's playing 24 minutes a night, including 6 to 8 minutes on the power play.
Right.
And no matter whether he makes this lineup or not, he's not getting that. He's not getting first unit power play time. He might get second unit time if he's playing well, maybe.
Right.
So you're looking at Shane Gostisbehere as Andrew McDonald.
Kind of, I guess, yeah.
And I'm not trying to put him in that sort of, you know, forsaken territory, but you're looking at him at 8 to 10 minutes a night of moderate to mildly poor hockey.
You know what? There's a lot of comparisons to it, too, in the sense that the play hasn't always been consistent from him. And then you also look at the contract now. He's got the contract out of any of the defensemen that you sit there and you go, am I getting the value that I think I should be getting for what I paid him?
You know where Shane Gostisbehere is playing 24 months from now?
Oh, boy.
Seattle. He's playing in Seattle.
Possibly. I mean,
he's playing in Seattle.
It wouldn't try. Well, let's put it this way. You're protecting, and this is so far off at this point, it's not that.
Like, is it though?
Well, no. To go into the who do you protect portion of it, but
I don't think it's that far away. You're starting to look at it.
Wait, you protect three defensemen if you're going to protect eight forwards, and there's reason to believe they're going to protect eight forwards.
You're right? Protecting Ivan Provorov. You're protecting Travis Sanheim.
And I would say you're probably protecting Phil Myers.
Phil Myers, yeah. And again, it goes back to between Ghost and Robert Hagg. If you had to protect one of those two, at this point, it's probably Robert Hagg.
Right.
So even if it wasn't Phil Myers or whoever in the organization, it's not going to be Shane Gostisbehere. He's just not getting protected.
Yeah, there's so much to consider about that group of defensemen, too, outside of the ones we're talking about who you'd obviously protect. Because, you know, Matt Niskanen's going to have a contract expire before then. And I don't see any reason, given what he's done this year, why you wouldn't want to try to bring a guy like that back.
I think you extend him very delicately around the Seattle expansion.
And I'm not saying you pay him $5 million either, like you are now because you acquired him in a trade. You know.
Well, I think you sign him for a year and then say, okay, listen, we're not going to protect you, but we'll re-sign you on July 1st. Like, we got you. One of those deals.
Right. And I mean, see, it's an interesting dynamic, too, because you can sit there and say you're not going to protect him. And there's teams that are looking for guys like that out of it. I mean,
absolutely.
There's a reason why Vegas, when it was their turn to do this, is making selections for guys like Derek Englund, and they get a goalie like Fleury, and they want these veteran guys who just round out the rest of the draft picks that they were going to have. Because that year they had three first-round draft picks because people were trading their first-rounders to avoid having to give up somebody on their current team.
Imagine trading them a first-round pick. Imagine trading Vegas a first-round pick so they would take William Karlsson from you. Who would ever do such a thing?
I just don't think that they ever valued him in that sense at all. They
didn't. Absolutely not. That kind of, and to be fair, who did?
Right. I mean, well, and see, there's differences too. You know, I mean, people manipulated it in a certain way. You know, like Florida did it in their way, where next thing you know, Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault are going to Vegas.
That whole top line
got to be great.
Yep.
You know, it just works out that way sometimes. I mean,
that whole top line in Vegas was built on two poor trades. It was William Karlsson, Riley Smith, and Jonathan Marchessault for like a lot of that season.
Right.
Two bad trades right there. They just got handed all of those wonderful players. Here's about 400 combined points this season. Take it.
And there's guys that got traded during that process that I don't think their teams are regretting. Like, I don't think Minnesota sits there and goes, you know, I regret trading Alex Tuch.
No.
He's been good. Vegas. But I don't think Minnesota's sitting there going, well, we regret that one. I mean, because I think they can look at a first-round pick that they've had in their own. You know, Erickson Ek's been really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Luke Cunningham. Those are guys who made the team anyway. And they go, we still had our future. We traded one small piece of it and had a lot of other guys who made it.
I think Minnesota's going to take a hit next time around, and I think they're going to have to trade Zach Parise.
That would be an interesting one.
With where the cap is going. You know, we've talked on the show before about the fact that the cap is going to remain flat for the next two seasons at 81.5, followed by a $1 million increase to 82.5.
And it depends on who you value on that team. Because let's put it this way, I think they've made it perfectly clear that they value certain, like the defensemen on that team. I think they value Jared Spurgeon a lot.
And they should. Spurgeon's a phenomenal defenseman.
If you're going to hold on to him and make sure he doesn't go anywhere, and you can protect him, obviously. That's not to say you can't.
Oh, he's got one of their spots for sure.
But you've got to make sure that you've got a lot of young forwards who you want to make sure you keep on your side. So do you dangle a Parise and say, if I'll give him up to make sure you don't take my – and that's not going to be just a straight up, hey, please take him. That's going to be, they're going to have to eat cap.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have to.
They're going to have to take a hit on that, because that Zach Parise deal, by the way, I was talking about it with producer Mike the other day. That runs until 2024-25.
Yeah.
That deal runs for five more seasons.
Right.
Today, Zach Parise is 35 years old. That contract is bad right this second. He's making just a hair over 7.5. It's bad right this second, and it's got five more years left on it.
Yeah, that's, you know.
That's atrocious.
Well, the irony being that it was a Chuck Fletcher deal.
And that it was an illegal contract 12 minutes after the ink dried.
Right. Not one of his finer ones, for sure. You know, I mean, you understand the thought process behind signing two guys like that at the same time to the same length contract.
You're looking at Montreal, and that Shea Weber contract still doesn't look that bad. And it's a very similar deal that, you know, the Flyers originally signed him to.
And despite all the injuries, he's still an effective player. That's the key.
Yep. So that deal doesn't always backfire.
Right.
But a lot of times it kind of does.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. Chuck Fletcher made those deals for those two players, and they look pretty bad, but it's still not as bad as Rick DiPietro.
No, it's certainly not, because Rick DiPietro got his 15 minutes of fame about 2 weeks ago.
What is it? He gets $1.5 million every year for until, like, the almost, what is it, 2028?
Something like that. It's the same day Briz gets paid. Yeah. It's the same day Bobby Bonilla gets paid. All the bums get paid on July 1st.
Yeah.
But either way.
Briz is sure enjoying it in retirement, right?
As far as I know, last I checked, he still lived in the area. And that's hilarious to me. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Is he still working with the NHL Network? I know he was doing some stuff for them.
I don't know that he does a lot with the NHL Network. He would do when the Cup final rolls.
I know he was doing content pieces.
And it would be awesome if this was allowed in this time, because if anybody could make it entertaining, it's
Put him in the bubble. Well, put him in the bubble.
But he would go for the Players Tribune and just start asking players random ridiculous questions. Like, I mean, I don't even care if he's not allowed to get near the players like it is right now, because everything's on Zoom calls. Put him on a Zoom call with a bunch of different players and just let him run the show. And let's watch everybody laugh hysterically. Because, I mean, he even does an interview. It was they sent him to the Pittsburgh-Nashville Cup Final.
Right. I remember that.
And he's standing there with Sidney Crosby. Sidney Crosby, the best player in the world at the time. And Crosby's laughing at him hysterically. Like, he's going to ask me this random ridiculous question, either about planets or a math problem or something.
It's your humongous big.
Right, and he's laughing at it like it's the funniest thing he's ever heard. Like, he can't believe he's really doing this. Because it's so unlike any interview that they ever do. So
amazing.
It cracks me up every single time. And I think it would be great if he had his, I mean, I guess in that sense, you don't even have to send him to the bubble to get him to interact with the players.
Just do it on Skype. Do it on Zoom.
Do a Zoom call.
But honestly, he would be absolutely incredible in the bubble. But tell me he wouldn't be a superstar on TSN Scrum Lurkers. Tell me seeing Briz in the background, and if you don't know, by the way, go look up TSN Scrum Lurkers. You might see some familiar faces.
Just a couple times.
So it's a feature on, is it on Jay and Dan's show?
Yes, it is.
Where they show the locker room clips of guys talking, and some of the faces of interviewers in the background. Man, and I know it's part of being professional, and you're trying to not put on any sort of face, and you're just trying to stand there and do your job, and you ask your question and you hold your microphone. But man, it's funny when you just zoom in on it.
I think there would be so much fun to that if Briz was part of it, because of the fact that Briz hated that part of it.
Oh, and he would make an absolute show out of it. Honestly, I want to see guys getting interviewed in the locker room from far away, right? A guy holding the boom mic and the player's over here. And then you just see Briz there with his little recorder right next to him. Because come on, that's funny.
Right. Let's because I don't know if I've ever told this on the show before, but I mean, years ago, the first game I ever actually covered, long before I was doing Sports Talk Philly and long before I was doing ESPN, was I was in college.
I'm sorry, was that sportstalkphilly.com and at 97.3 ESPN? Oh, okay. Just checking. Just making sure.
So long before those, I had a buddy of mine who, while in college, said, oh, all you have to do is write them and tell them you're trying to get college experience and they should let you in. So I go ahead and I do it for a game. I did it right after. It was 2 weeks after the Winter Classic of 2012.
That was Boston?
It was the Ranger Winter
Classic. Rangers.
But it was,
okay.
But I tried to pick a random game that was not going to be press heavy. So I picked I think it was a Monday night or Tuesday night game against Minnesota.
Okay.
Like a non-conference.
Should be about right.
Like, I certainly wasn't going to try to set my sights on the Rangers.
Pittsburgh,
or
right.
The Penguins, exactly. Like, I'm not going to do that. But let me
– Toronto.
Especially because Pittsburgh at the time, even more so than it was – or than it is now, I would say. Because it kind of – as much as we're hyped up for that being the exhibition, it's kind of fizzled a little bit as a rival. But
2012 was when it was its heat.
It was at its peak at that time. And you had a playoff.
That's when that playoff series – that's the year that playoff series came up.
It was as intense as it was going to get. So I avoided that, and I just picked this random game against Minnesota. But I want you to picture the roster at that time. This is
Claude. I don't want to.
Well, no, but no, for the Flyers. This is Claude Giroux's career year. This is Scott Hartnell at his peak. This is Jaromir Jagr's Flyer year.
Oh, wow. That was a good year.
Kimmo Tiininen.
Was that Matt Reed's rookie year?
Might have been. Yeah,
I think it was the year that he scored a bunch of goals that year.
You know whose rookie year it was? It was Sean Couturier's rookie year.
It was, oh my, he was such a baby face.
Because I remember telling myself, and you got to remember something, nowadays it's not as big of a deal as it would have been then. This is my first time I'm in the Flyers locker room after the game. It's the first time I'm in there, and you can't help but look around and go, I can't believe. And I look back on it now.
Listen, I get it.
Well, no, but I look back on it now doing it even more so, because I'm sitting there going, to think I was actually in the room at the time. And it was, you got to remember, they were a good team.
You weren't just in the room, you were in that room.
Well, right, and like, right. Think about it for a minute. This wasn't just, like, they were a good team. They were going to make
– They were a good team.
They, not only did make
the last Flyers team to win a playoff series.
Totally dismantled Pittsburgh in that series. At least, you know, first three games, and then the next two were a little bit of a struggle, and then they.
And Claude Giroux. Hello.
Right. And it was Claude Giroux's. It was, you know, another one of those should have been a Hart Trophy.
We don't talk about that enough, by the way. Like, I know that we talk about it all the time, Claude Giroux, the shift, game six, Pittsburgh. Philadelphia doesn't talk about that enough, man. That's one of the better moments of sports in the past decade.
So, like, I look back on it now, and I sit there and I go, wow, to be in the room with Jaromir Jagr, you know, like, that's the guy who really stands out.
That's it.
The thing I remember about it is that, and maybe call it my lack of experience of being in a room like that with a bunch of other people, call it trying to stay out of the way because don't ruin your shot for later, I guess.
Don't screw it up, kid.
Like, well, in the sense that I'm just the guest here. I'm not really in here like these other ones are. So stay out of the way. Don't get into people's way. So I didn't get close to Jagr at all. And actually, ironically enough, when you hear the voice that comes behind you that sits there and tells you that the next player is ready to go, so I think it was Scott Hartnell. So now I'm running from, okay, I'm totally on the outside. I don't even know. Like, I have those audio clips still. I don't think you can even hear what Jagr's trying to say. Whatever it was, it's not usable.
By the way, Jaromir Jagr, top five player of all time?
Definitely.
Okay. We don't have to go into that, but
because what is he? Third in goals, second in points.
He's got to be in the conversation.
He's top five.
If he's not there, he's definitely in the conversation.
And a guy who played well into his 40s when it was not the thing to do.
And left and came back. Didn't just stay and hang on. He went to Europe. We thought he was done, and then showed back up at 37 or 38, and just went, "Yeah, I'm here to play another decade."
And then played until he was what, 42, 43? Before.
Here you go. I'm just here to score 15, 20 goals every year for the next 5 years or so and pad some stats. Here you go. Right. Deal with it. Pay me $4 million, please.
Right. So.
Okay.
His audio is totally unusable.
Sure.
But I hear them say Scott Hartnell. So now I turn around and say, you know, I've got people piling behind me. So now I'm right in front of my own.
You're up top. Right.
But I'm right there. And that's where it is. I actually remember telling myself, because I'm like, you also sit there and tell yourself, as much as you're going, stay out of the way, don't ruin your shot.
It might be your only shot.
Right. You're going, what if I never get back here again? So I'm sitting here going, I got to ask somebody a question.
Right. And it's not Jagr.
Well, no, but in my head, I turn, I said, who's going to be the easiest person to ask a question to based on the list? And you're going,
Scott Hartnell.
I'm 19 years old, or probably 20 years old at that point. I'm going, if I can't ask the guy who's younger than I am playing in the NHL a question, and he's not going to look at me like I'm some sort of insane person.
Would that be Sean Couturier?
Right. So okay. That's where I started. I'm going, if I can't ask a 18, 19-year-old kid a question.
You don't deserve to be here.
What am I doing here myself? You know, like,
you're never going to be able to ask Jagr that question. Right.
Don't get me wrong. I did get up the gumption that night to sit there and ask Captain Claude, future Captain Claude Giroux, like, standing there knowing that's the next guy. He's going to be the next captain.
Because we knew.
We all knew it.
Yeah, as soon as Bobby Clark messed up his name, you know.
Realistically, I say, like, I know we say then, you know, then soon to be captain. He was the de facto captain because that was after.
Pronger was out, right.
So he was the de facto captain of that team. And
right, because Pronger was hurt by the time the Winter Classic.
Here's the other thing about that team. Not only was it Jagr and what was it? It was Jagr, Hartnell, Kimmo Timonen, Sean Couturier.
Danny Briere was still there, right?
Ilya Bryzgalov. Danny Briere was standing outside.
Was Simon Gagné back?
No, Gagné was not back at that point. But, okay. No, Danny Briere was standing out in the hallway talking to other players after it was over. And I remember, like, I walked by it at a double take. Like, holy crap, that's Danny Briere right there. And, like you're having that feeling. Finish with all of those players I just mentioned, and there's not a bad one on the list. Honestly, there's not a bad one on that list.
The bottom half of that roster was a little weak. You didn't read the whole roster here.
No, I'm talking about of the list of players we got. Like, we.
Oh, okay. You got the good part of the roster.
Like, for the media experience, I'm talking.
You mean you weren't excited for Andreas Nödel?
I actually liked Andreas Nödel.
But come on.
No, like, that wasn't, like, the same exactly.
You weren't excited for Braden Coburn when he was bad?
Right. I mean, let's put it like, that would have even been Braden Schenn's first year.
Wow. They came in, him and Couturier came in the same year?
Yeah.
Huh. I think
so, because the trades happened after 11, right?
Maybe so, you're right.
12 would have been, that was Braden Schenn's first year. It was Wayne Simmons' first year.
Did he not go back to, did Braden Schenn not go back to spend a year in the AHL?
He might have split, but that was right after his first NHL goal.
No, I guess you're right.
That Winter Classic.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. Okay. I think he had come up kind of the Morgan Frost treatment.
A little bit, but
he yeah.
was close to being there for most of it. I mean, that was – but that was that year.
Okay. You know?
And don't get me wrong, because I think if I'm not mistaken, I believe – It wasn't quite yet, right? I don't think it was Vinny LeCavalier just yet. It was close.
By the way, I love going back through old Flyers teams and just looking at the fourth line and going, who's that?
Right. So
who's Pierre-Edouard Belmar?
Well, I think we remember that
one. Okay, fine. Who's Chris Vandevelde?
Unfortunately, I still have...
Me too. I sure do. But you know what I mean. There were some really poor players on the fourth line of some of these teams.
I'll give you one not from that team. But he was a fourth liner who was then playing for Minnesota. Daryl Powell was on Minnesota that year.
Daryl Powell. Oh, Daryl Powell.
There's a fourth line.
Foo, baby. He's kind of in that Riley Cote camp for me.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just kind of in that same line of Aaron Asham, Riley Cote, Dan Carcello. We always had one. We always had one garbage can.
But nonetheless, like the list of players that the media gave us that night was really good.
It's a fantastic list.
No. And then, by the way, we're done in the room. Let's go down to the coach.
Wait. 2012 was Lavi. Wow.
And let me tell you. You want to talk about commanding a room? The guy steps in and has this look on his face, like the intensity that comes off of this guy is just out of this world.
Laviolette or Vigneault? Who's more intense? Or who's more commanding?
Laviolette was more commanding because of the fact that Laviolette, you could never really tell if he was pissed off.
He was weird like that.
Normal mood.
Yeah.
Like, AV, you get the impression, like, with AV, you can tell when it's time to be serious, and you can tell when I'm going to tell a joke, and I'm not, and chances are, just about every press conference that there is with AV, you're going to get a laugh of some kind.
Like absolutely.
Something that makes himself smile and therefore makes you smile.
He really is infectious. Once he starts laughing, I learned that watching the 2002 clip of the player skating by the bench and mimicking him.
It wasn't
Burrows. It was somebody.
No, I know.
Ugh. You know exactly the clip I'm talking about. He skates by the bench and he makes a little face like Alain Vigneault. And Alain Vigneault loses his mind behind the bench. He loses all composure for several minutes.
There's one of the clips from when he was with the Rangers where Wes McCauley does his whole thing with announcing a goal after a review.
Yep.
And he's laughing hysterically at that too. Like
Alain Vigneault seems like a great sense of humor. And Peter Laviolette would never be caught dead laughing behind the bench. Not like that.
No, I mean, Peter Laviolette, the last clip we've got of him mic'd up from anything, which by the way, you know, fits in with the empty arena setting.
That was the lead into the Winter Classic, right?
Well, we have that from Flyer stuff, but I even have one, like if you go to look at something, there's a clip of him yelling on the Nashville bench. This is from when he was still with Nashville, yelling at an official saying, "You winked at us. Like you just winked at the bench. I saw you do it." And the guy's going, "I didn't wink at you, and you know I did."
I remember this clip. It came out earlier. Yeah.
But Fired Up Lavi is the best Lavi.
Oh, it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. And he really did. He steered that ship when he had to, but he also did a fantastic job of letting his players lead.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, I want him to get back into the league so badly soon.
He will.
Because here's the thing. There are coaches who, when they are not coaching, are cut out for the TV side if they take a break. And
that's not Lavi.
Well, and apparently he tried it, I think, or did a couple, like, somewhere. I don't even know where it would have been. Like, it was that one year in between when he wasn't coaching the Flyers. It was right before he came back.
Right.
And I don't remember where he would have been at that time to do it, but...
I could see him being too intense and forgetting to call the game because he's too busy analyzing the game.
Right.
I could see him being a little too intense for the TV side because, you know, going back to Alain Vigneault, I think Alain Vigneault will absolutely have a career if he wants it after he's done coaching.
He interests me a little bit.
Because I think he'll be a panelist more so than a booth guy.
And I guess I should sit there and say that I think, like, I don't see him on, like, the NHL Network. I see him on TSN or something of that sort because of the fact that you need to connect his roots, the French-Canadian side, to really make that, I think, to make that work. Because I think, look, he's a funny guy, and I don't have a problem with it. I understand him just fine, but there's people who might look, he's got a heavy enough accent that I don't know how it would work on, like, this way. Sometimes you can hear guys with that heavy accent on NHL Network. Marty Buron's a good example of it. He's got a little bit of an accent. And
yeah,
don't get me wrong, I love his breakdowns. I think he does a great job on that network. But I feel like you sit there and you want, like, and people understand it. People understand that the Canadian angle is, and the influence is still very heavy in the NHL, no matter where you're going to go. And you're going to need those guys no matter what.
Like, absolutely.
I love listening to Marty Buron. I love listening to Alex Tanguay on there. Like, those guys, I love listening to those guys because I do like the perspective. I always like the perspective.
For sure.
I can see AV doing TSN more than I can see him doing NHL Network.
And I agree with that point.
Connection. And the fact, you know, like, he's coached Canada in world championships and things like that. Like, I think that's enough to make him be a Canadian staple. I mean, let's do it this way.
Sure.
Another guy who I think has this, you know, a guy who has this this type of relationship with the media, who would probably be good on television because he has tried it apparently, is John Tortorella. I think he would be good after his career on television in some way as a panelist. I really do.
I think John Tortorella would have to have a conversation with the FDC before he goes on the air.
Yeah.
Because I feel like John Tortorella needs a 7-second delay or an editor.
Because you mean he can't say exactly what he said when asked what happens if we hear players cursing on the ice, and he just comes right out and says exactly.
He says he doesn't care, but he sure says it in a way that's not very media friendly.
Right, exactly.
So I think John Tortorella could. I don't know if John Tortorella has the desire to fundamentally change how he lives his life, because I think he lives a lot of his life with profanity kind of just flowing freely, not even just as, you know, that's who John Tortorella is.
Well, yes, but I think there's also a control element to it. See,
and John wait, I'm sorry. Are you about to make an argument for John Tortorella and having self-control? Okay, please go ahead and make this argument.
Well, no, a little bit.
You can use any evidence in the past, any at all.
Well, I'm not trying to use any evidence. I'm saying, like, there's one. It's one thing to ask a guy something 10 minutes after you played a game and get the real "I'm still on the bench" answer, and to say you're going into the studio and you know what you're going. Like, the setting changes things a little bit. You start to know when to have that control to an extent. And let's put it this way. I think it's funny because there's an interview. A TSN interview, because he had done TV work for TSN during again a year where he was off between Columbus and Vancouver.
Between firings. Yeah.
Right, between firings. And he even said, "I certainly respect what you guys do." He goes, "I just," like, he still has that, he explained how he still had the desire to coach, you know, because he definitely still wanted to be there. And even though he did the TV work on occasion, he goes, it's hard work. It's harder than I thought it would be. And you really need a good team around you and stuff like that. But he did make a point. He goes, "You guys show that top 10 list of all the things that I've said all the time." He goes, "I wish you'd stop because so much of it is older." Like, and he goes, I've changed a lot over those years. And granted, I understand that he still has moments like that.
But okay.
He does make a valid point, which I think is 90% of the time he goes in and has a press conference and doesn't say anything that becomes noteworthy.
What about that time Artemi Panarin wasn't feeling too good before a playoff game?
Yeah, I hear you. That one, well, and there you go. I think that's to his point. 90% of the stuff he says in press conferences just disappears.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Played all the time and brought up all the time because we love to say it.
And you can say that about any controversial figure. You can say that about, you know, the things Don Cherry said. 90% of the stuff he said didn't really go anywhere either.
Right.
You know, it's the 10% that's inflammatory inflammatory.
But the one thing I found is, like, when he coached the Rangers or when he coached Vancouver, I found him to still be this hot-headed kind of guy, didn't really give you a whole lot from a media perspective. With Columbus,
he has matured.
Well, in terms of, he gives these answers now that he almost breaks down the game more. He breaks down his own players a whole lot more.
You know what it is? He doesn't get upset when you ask him questions about his decisions. He doesn't get upset when you ask him about the penalty kill or bad decisions he made or this, that, the other. He gets fired up when you attack his players.
He does a little bit.
And he's taken on a bit of a Papa Bear role, which is something I would never say that John Tortorella would be doing.
And I would even say that he does get upset when you ask him about his decisions to an extent. And I say it because he doesn't want people to like he like and I look, trust me, as somebody who's been to press conferences for other coaches, I don't typically see his too much because sometimes they're not even long enough to make it to them, if you
know. Right.
But nonetheless, like I sit there and I go, I can understand how he's sitting there going, you've got a job to do and I have a job to do, and don't
where you and are, we are enemies here. Right.
No, not even say enemies.
Where I think he'd say that.
He's sitting there looking at the rest of us and going, where you sit, don't tell me how to do my job, and I won't tell you how to do your job, in the sense that don't coach for me. Like, don't ask me a question about why didn't you put this guy here when he was here yesterday. Like, don't try to coach. But
and that's fair.
But feel free to, like, you know, ask about other things. Like, and he wants to talk about, what do you think of blank player? What's your first impression of this? He wants to talk like that. And he definitely, you know, I will watch a lot of his, because Columbus does a really good job from a social media angle of making their media availability.
I think when you have John Tortorella as your coach, you are responsible to the world for putting every single thing he says on Twitter.
They are, but they stream a lot, which says a lot.
They do.
And I will watch before games against the Flyers, A, because he usually can, as most media members do, they'll ask, what's the lineup look like for tonight? He might say, same as last time, this guy in goal, whatever. He'll confirm a lot of his lineup decisions on a game day.
He'll give you stuff.
Well, and that'll help me know what I'm going into putting together a game.
It'll help you write your article.
Well, exactly. A little bit. But also, he's not afraid to then talk about the other team. Like, when they played the home-and-home against the Flyers, he looked at the 5-1 win the Flyers had on home ice, and before the game on the road that they won in overtime, he's in there going, I know what the score said. That wasn't their best game, and we know it, and they know it.
And we knew it, too. We talked about it on the show.
We all knew it, too. And he's like, they're going to be better tonight, and we have to be ready for that because that's not their best either. Yeah, they scored 5 goals, but they didn't take – that's not – the shot total was lower. And he's fully willing to go into that to talk about a team. And he definitely talked about them with a lot of respect.
Yeah, for sure.
He'll talk about certain opponents with a lot of respect, and there's times where he talks about opponents where it's like, I don't know what we're doing, but we should have never lost that game.
I think you can tell a lot about how John Tortorella feels about other coaches in the league based on how he talks about their teams. And some teams are really well coached. They had a good game plan and we went out there and we just executed our plan better. Those are coaches he respects. And when he comes out and goes, I don't know how we lost to this team. We definitely should have beat them. Might be a coach he doesn't really respect quite as much.
Well, there's got to be something to be said about coaches who, when you're a coach like John Tortorella and you're right up there in the top 15 in all-time wins. You've won a cup in your career.
Absolute surefire Hall of Famer.
Well, and you've got the credentials, right?
Yep.
When you're coaching opposite of Peter Laviolette, Barry Trotz, Alain Vigneault, you know, eventually, now that we know some other news, eventually Lindy Ruff, you know, because he's back in the
cup. Oh, right. We do have that news, too. Yeah.
Here's another one. When he was still coaching, because I don't think he's actively coaching at the moment, but he could be at any time. Ken Hitchcock, guys like that.
Didn't he go out to Edmonton?
Briefly,
he left there.
Because, yeah, he's a free agent now.
Right.
I think he's in an advisory role.
I think there was talk about him going back to Dallas when their opening came available, but I don't think
there
he did.
There was some thought of it when it was, you know, when Montgomery got fired.
Right.
Or resigned, at least, or something of that sort. But
by the way, one more coach I do want to mention in terms of future media careers. We might as well just finish the Metro here and talk about Rod Brind'Amour. The second he wants it, he's got a job on TSN, Sportsnet, ESPN, CBS, all of them.
Well, several weeks it was before our last show, so I'm kind of really backtracking here, but one of the top 5 lists they did on 97.3 for one of them was and it wasn't the best ones, it was our favorites. And I put him at 4.
Really? What coaches in the NHL?
Right.
Okay.
At any time, not necessarily like.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, like, and I even said, I put Alain Vigneault at 5, and I even said, like, not to make it seem like Brind'Amour's better, but like I said, like, Vigneault, I always had this, because I said, Vigneault, I always had this thing of, you think about the end of all of the other times, and you go, boy, the end with the Rangers was awful. I don't know if I want that guy coaching my team. I don't know if
I'll take the cup final, honestly.
Well, and, you know, Vancouver ended poorly. I don't know if I want that, you know.
I'll take the cup final. I'll take the ending for the cup final.
He came in, and his personality was such a breath of fresh air that I instantly liked him. And I couldn't believe how much I liked him from the beginning. And then, oh, by the way, the team was as good as it looked in 8 years. I think
it's pretty nice.
You know, I think I really like this guy as a coach, you know. But what I said about Brendan Moore and putting him at four was, I'm like, you know, watch any of those clips they show on the Hurricane social media. I want to run through a wall after hearing this guy talk.
I want to run through a wall and then have dinner with him. Like, he's kind of awesome. I don't know. Like, I don't know what else to say about Rod Brindamore, but he's done a fantastic job with that Carolina team. They play tight, disciplined hockey.
Yeah.
He looks like he could step on the ice and play 30 minutes a night.
Probably a little bit.
Apparently, he's the first one in the workout room every single morning. He's there at 4 a.m. or whatever it is. And listen, he's a former Flyer. I have a soft spot. What can I say?
In giving my reasoning for putting him on my list to begin with, I even said, it's not even the Flyer connection. I said, his motivation is going to – and I closed it out.
I'll give him 5% Flyers connection.
And I did say, like, that does have something to do with it. I even said, that's not even the whole story. It's not just, hey, it's a former Flyer. I'm like, this guy's a motivator. His teams play well.
And he just seems like a good person.
He does seem like a good person also. And I tried – like, I closed it out by even saying, you know, not to say that I don't hope a lot of people win Stanley Cups down there, but I'm like, I hope he wins a cup as a coach, just like he won a cup as a player.
I don't want to wish
him win it.
I want him to go to a non-divisional team and win a whole bunch of cups. Great. I just don't want him to do it in my division.
We were thrilled to watch him win the Stanley Cup as a player in Carolina.
He can have that one. Yep.
And I think we'd be thrilled to see him do it as a coach. If he was, especially if he's going against a team that you sit there and you go, you've had yours.
As long as they don't go through us. I'm fine with it.
Like, let's say that most of the Chicago dynasty was still around. I'm not talking about player wise, but like, let's say Joel Quenneville's still in Chicago, and your Stanley Cup final this year is Carolina Chicago. Not, it's really throwing it out there, obviously, because they're two of the,
man, that would be wild.
But nonetheless, like, I'm sitting here going, wouldn't you want Rod Brindamore and the Carolina Hurricanes to win?
Oh yeah, if they're playing literally any team. If they're playing any team in the league other than the Philadelphia Flyers, any step of the way, yeah, sure, go for it. Cool.
Sure.
Carolina, cool, man. They're a division team. I don't necessarily like them. But in terms of – I'll root for Rod Brindamore any day of the week.
Right.
And he's earned it in my book.
And in fairness, the top of my list was Ken Hitchcock and Peter Laviolette.
Okay.
I said Hitchcock was my number one for one reason and one reason only.
Hitchcock! Ken Hitchcock, get out there, guys. Let's go.
He does have that. It's kind of funny.
He's got a little Mickey Mouse in him. Let's go, guys. Run the power play.
When he's yelling on the bench, yes, he does.
If you've ever heard Ryan Reeves' impression of him, it is phenomenal. Look it up. It's incredible. He played for him in St. Louis.
Well, and see, this is the thing. The connection for me was there were two things, and I brought both of them up. I've said it before on here. My favorite player growing up was Mike Bonanno, Dallas Stars, and that was the head coach.
Ken Hitchcock.
Nine stars.
And there you go.
When he came to the Flyers.
The cup that shouldn't have been.
During the lockout year, and I think this was, because I posted this a couple times. I posted it on Facebook when I was doing that 10-day challenge, and I posted it on Twitter after I brought it up in the interview that I'm talking about. I have a picture of myself on the ice with Ken Hitchcock because I did a clinic with him during the lockout year.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
And nice guy. Cool, really cool instruction, especially when you're working with a lot of kids that are probably ranging from topping out at, say, 14, 15, and going as young as, say, 6 or 7. And I was, like, right smack in the middle of it.
Okay.
And he had a way of working with everybody in a really cool way, and I always like that. And Lavi's an obvious one. I mean, like, why would I put Lavi on the list if for nothing else other than playing with some jam and stuff like that? Like, we loved it. We just loved him.
Yeah, I always feel like Ken Hitchcock, obviously his pedigree far, far outstripped ever doing this. I feel like Ken Hitchcock would be an incredible AHL coach. I feel like he was phenomenal at managing young talent, helping young talent take the next step. And I feel like if he had stepped in instead of maybe an Alain Vigneault, it would have been interesting to see how a guy like Ken Hitchcock worked with Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee and even Travis Sanheim and, you know, the steps he's made this year. I'd really be curious to see how a guy like Hitch would have dealt with this current team. Obviously, Alain Vigneault's done a phenomenal job, but I really always felt like that was one of Hitchcock's strengths.
Yeah, and one of the things I said when I gave the reasoning too is, I mean, like, the guy's a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
I mean, he does have the cup win to his name, but he's also, I think he's third on the all-time wins list.
Is he already in?
I don't think he is yet. And I don't know if that's because he
is he still active?
technically, like, I mean, it was very recent. I'll look it up right now because I didn't believe he was in. I know he's going to be.
I was going to say, if he's not, he most certainly is the minute he gets eligible unanimously.
I feel like if he was going to be, or if he was already in, then I'd remember knowing that he was in. Because, like, I feel like I'd want to watch that speech, you know? Like,
for sure.
You know, like, there's certain guys who go in. Yeah, I don't believe so. And
man, if he gets a player to introduce him, who is it? Is it just Mike Modano?
That would be – well, no, you know what? I don't know who introduces
him. He's got such a long career. It could be anybody.
Well, but here's the thing. Someone does present him with the plaque and take the picture. I think you got to go with Modano.
Maybe.
I feel like that's got to be the guy. That's
hey, he might have had somebody, you know, he might have been closer with somebody that we don't know just off the ice. I mean,
he had a good relationship with him, though. And I, like, you know, he definitely did. And I don't know that he's going to have, you know, I don't think the longevity is there for any other team like that. Like, he coached Dallas for 7 years.
Right.
And every other team he was with, I mean, St. Louis, he had six, essentially. And he was there for a good amount of time, but I almost feel like you look at his years in St. Louis and how recent that was, and a lot of the same players that he would have coached just won a Stanley Cup with another former Flyer.
Yep.
And
that's crazy, by the way.
But I think the connection there becomes great. Like, there's something to be said about that's the best player of the franchise that you won the Stanley Cup with, and it was the only time you won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Do you have present you? I think it's got to be that guy.
You're probably right.
And unfortunately, I don't think I can relate, you know, Mike Modano wasn't the captain of that team.
But he was the captain of that team.
Darian Hatcher with that kind of connection the way I do with Modano. Same thing with, like, even like a guy like Ed Belfour. And he coached Ed Belfour, you know, for several years of that. That was the goalie who was essentially got them the cup.
Right. Well,
you need to have the good goalie. That was the guy.
Well, since we're talking about winning the cup, I got a question for you.
Okay.
I would like you to pull up the bracket.
Sure.
The NHL bracket for the upcoming season with the current teams filled into their spots.
Sure thing.
Because I had a conversation with producer Mike the other day.
Okay.
And I'm looking right now at the 8 teams that are playing in the play-in round. And I'm looking at the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Montreal Canadiens, the New York Islanders, the Florida Panthers, the Carolina Hurricanes, and the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at these 8 teams. Those are the teams that the Flyers will potentially face in the first round. They will face one of those 8 teams.
Right.
You have it up?
Yes.
Look at those 8 teams. How many scare you in a 7-game series?
So the 8 that are not, that have to play the qualifier.
The teams the Flyers could play in the first round.
Right. So once
the qualifier. The play-in round teams. Yeah.
Qualifying round.
Which of those, and by the way, for our listeners, we're going to do our full playoff previews next week. It's going to be Kevin, myself, and we're going to try to get some other people in here too. And we're really going to go in on all the play-in series and just kind of talk about it. And we're going to do all our predictions next week. So this week, we're looking at these teams. Kevin, what do you think?
I mean, I'll try to – I'm going to go from the bottom up as I'm looking because of the fact that it makes it a little easier to do
that. Yeah.
Montreal doesn't.
Okay.
The Rangers are a kind of sneaky team at that slot. And I only say that because of the fact that they were getting good at the right time.
But did the plug get pulled?
Potentially.
Did the drain get popped?
You know what I think would be the key for the Rangers in this case more than anything? I have no doubt that they're going to be good in terms of Panarin will be good and Zibanejad will be good and they'll get some performance from the defensemen. No question about it.
Congratulations. You've named the 2 best players on New York by a wide margin.
Well, I understand that, but for me, it's the goalies. Because I liked what Shesterkin was doing, and if he can come back in and catch fire and hit a roll like that, then you've got a shot at anything. But it really hinges on him, I think, like, in a sense.
How much combined playoffs experience do Shesterkin and Georgiev have?
Not much.
I don't think it's any.
Right. Like, Shesterkin definitely has none because he's a rookie.
Right. If Georgiev has some, it might be a game.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to try to play that card, then it's Lundqvist, you know.
Like, well,
if
right.
Playing the playoff experience card, you've got to go Lundqvist. But I don't even know if Lundqvist is, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying is their setup is great for a regular season where everybody can play 25, 30 games and whoever steals starts can steal starts. We're talking about a playoff series, 4 to 7 games. You only have 4 to 7 chances to name a starting goalie.
Well, and in this case for the Rangers, you're talking 3 to 5.
Well, no, I know. I'm talking about a first round matchup here. We're going to Flyers perspective here.
Get past it. That's why I'm saying for a concern level. I'm even talking like to me. I don't know that I see many scenarios where Montreal wins that series to even get to the first round.
I agree.
The only one I see where it does happen is if Carey Price stands on his head and doesn't allow a hole.
Oh, please, 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 please.
You know, that's about the only one I can see.
Actually, I don't want that to happen because then Pittsburgh gets Lafreniere, but whatever. That's neither here nor there.
We think anyway.
Oh, tell me I'm wrong. The only debate there is if Edmonton also loses.
Well, honestly, we've already had this debate. It's he's going to one of three teams. It's either Pittsburgh, Edmonton, or Arizona because of the Taylor Hall effect, as long as Taylor Hall is still playing there.
Right.
So that's my thing with the Rangers. Like, I actually like the Rangers team better than I like Montreal's team.
Yeah, but again, looking at a potential first round matchup, I don't think the Rangers present any sort of problems for the Flyers.
I don't think so either. Well, I think that Alain Vigneault knows a way to challenge them, you know.
And I'm sure Kevin Hayes knows a thing or two.
And so Florida is the next one on the list.
Trash. Move on.
Here's the thing about Florida. Florida's chances to me are the same as Montreal's in the sense that if it's going to happen.
Sergei Bobrovsky.
Bobrovsky. I'm not trying to say they don't have good players. I just can't see them.
They don't have good enough players.
The thing that I always usually equate it to is, you know, there are a lot of times and Boston's a really great team, obviously, right? But there's a lot of times where I sit there and I go, how much of Boston's success is one line? And if that one line is shut down, they might not win that game. It's not going to happen 5 times. Don't get me wrong.
Right. And the problem is making this comparison is if that's the case, you still have Tuukka Rask on that team.
Well, Tuukka Rask, and you still have a second line that has David Krejci.
Right. Even in addition to the depth of the team really good defensive core, which, by the way, neither the Panthers nor the Rangers have.
Right, but in Florida's case, if Huberdeau, Barkov, and Dadonov aren't going, where are you supposed to get the scoring?
If they're not insane.
Do you really think that you're going to get the same, especially in such a shortened amount of time, do you really think you're getting that kind of performance from Nola Chari?
No.
As a second or third liner because he's been playing that high because he's not the fourth liner he was with Boston?
You know? It's insane how good Boston is, by the way.
I've praised Boston's fourth line so much because to have players of that level.
They're disgusting.
Fourth line is insanity.
They're disgusting. It's awful.
Columbus is an interesting one. And again, I think Columbus, I think I compare to the Rangers again, because if the goaltending is decent, I think you've got something there, because the thing that you've got with Columbus is not necessarily any good, like, over-the-top player. Werenski's probably the best one they've got. And then I say, you know, Werenski and then Dubois are probably the two that stand out the most. And Atkinson's good, and they just added Josh Anderson back.
They're a fine team.
He's an injured player who's able to come back. Bjorkstrand was good.
Seth Jones, Zach Werenski is a great pairing.
Right.
Yeah.
And here's where I'm going with that. They were playing with such a confidence in themselves, and Tortorella is such a motivator and can get them.
We talked about that for sure.
And I think they have a shot in that series, you know, that 8-9 series.
The thing is, though, we're talking about these teams that are kind of rolling the dice on goaltending.
So far, yeah.
The teams we've talked about so far. The problem is Montreal's rolling the dice on Carey Price. Florida's rolling the dice on Sergei Bobrovsky. The Rangers are rolling the dice on Henrik Lundqvist or another one of their top-tier prospects. Yeah. Columbus is rolling the dice on
two unknowns,
Elvis Merzlikins. Jonas Korpisalo, or I'm sorry, is it Jonas Korpisalo who's still there?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like, yeah, I get what you're saying, and I think they're a better team. In terms of skaters, I think they're a better team than I think they're a better team than the Rangers. I think they're a deeper team than the Panthers. They're probably about on par.
Right.
right there.
Let me try to answer the question.
But they don't have the goaltending.
Well, right. Let me try to answer the question because you're saying who would scare you in the first round, like right. Once they got there.
Right. I'm talking about a first round matchup.
Well, here's the thing. I think any of the bottom four teams we just talked about, while they all have a shot to win their qualifier,
Flyers in five.
I would think that they are going to be so used up from even that series that they wouldn't be the same threat to a team that had only three games separated by 3 days each.
Right, because one thing that we're not talking about here is like playing those meaningful games can be an advantage because you get your legs going, you get your juices pumping. The problem is...
And what if you have overtime?
Right, the problem is... You don't have 8 months a season behind you to build your gas tank. Right. You were just sitting on the couch for 4 months and couldn't skate. Right. So a lot of teams. Oh, okay.
Some people had privilege.
80% of the league.
Oh yes, no, you're.
So a lot of your players, you're gonna go and you're gonna play one exhibition game, and then you're going 100% to the wall. For 3 to 5 games to stay alive. Right. Getting out of that is going to drain you more so than just we played some playoff games and they just played exhibition games. Ours are harder than theirs. No. Flyers don't care if they're 0-3, specifically the Flyers, because they came in as the fourth seed and can't go anywhere but up.
Go up, and that's about it. Yeah.
There is no motivation for Alain Vigneault to play anybody for any purpose other than conditioning.
Correct.
None. Yeah. Zero. The Flyers get 3 extra pre-postseason games. That's it.
And here's the thing, and I think this is where what he said gets a little misconstrued. It's not like they're trying to tell you the round-robin games don't matter.
And they're not throwing them. Right.
But they're not going to look at it and sit there and go, I want to worry about this in the same way I worry about a playoff series.
You can't.
The same thing. We're not... Like, the bottom line is AV can come out tomorrow and say again, just like he said earlier, we could lose all 3 games. It doesn't mean our season's over. That's
right.
The point. You could lose all 3 of those games. Your season's not over. You still have to play a 7-game series after
that. And that's the incredible, incredible advantage that the top 4 teams have in the East and the West. Sure. Not only do they not have to go straight to 100, they don't have to immediately floor it in their second game.
Right.
They also get to play another week and a half of relatively stress-free hockey.
Right.
And they get to work on getting in game shape and getting their conditioning up and getting their cardio and getting back to where they need to be.
Sure, yeah.
So they're just going to have better gas tanks going into the first round because they have the luxury of working on them.
Right.
The other teams don't have the luxury of building a gas tank for 4 weeks. They're getting a 20-day training camp.
Right.
Max. It's not even 20 days. So these, I don't think enough is being made of how big an advantage this top four thing is.
Sure.
And God forbid the Flyers start winning some games and they get a first, second, third seed. And they're hosting, you know, second, third round matchups, because we also have to remember that they reseed.
Right.
So in the second round, Flyers are probably hosting a second round series, but that does come with it. Last line change. That matters. You submit your lineup second. That matters. It doesn't matter as much as it does in other years, obviously, but it still matters.
Right. Like I think that the home away thing is overblown from the standpoint of like, There's a total, like, the idea that it's, oh, Carter Hart doesn't play so well on the road.
That's gone. They sit on a different bench and wear a different colored jersey. Right. It doesn't matter.
Site, you're wearing a different jersey.
What's yeah. The big deal? There's no fans, period. It's fine.
The other stuff is a big deal, though. Yeah, last change is huge.
It's a big deal, no matter where
you're playing.
We talked earlier about that 2012 Pittsburgh Penguins series. Last change was huge in that series. The whole series. Peter Laviolette used last change in that series multiple times to get advantages.
Right.
You know, same in 2010, you know, the comeback series against Boston, some of those big comeback plays were, you know, because the Flyers had last change at home.
Right. So, like, I think about that, too. Like, I think about the seeding, too. Like, if you can up yourself to 1 or 2 out of the round robin, and one of these 4 teams we just talked about pulls off an upset in the qualifier. Now you get
the easy matchup. Yep.
You get maybe something even just slightly easier.
What I'm hearing is that the Flyers are going to play Columbus because Columbus is going to beat the Leafs and Toronto is going to implode.
Here's the thing. As much as I could see that happening, honestly.
Toronto would implode.
Toronto is one of those teams that I actually would sit there and tell you is a potential threat.
They're dangerous. Oh, yeah.
The fact that I want to – and the key is – and we won't know this until we actually start to watch. And believe me, I will be sitting there probably – I will sit there and I will be making it – you know, I'll be on my couch. I'll bring it up right now. You know what? Because she just popped over my shoulder anyway. Because she came in the room really quick.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention it, but since you brought it up, tell her I said hi.
Because, like, here's the thing. We you know, wedding happened, honeymoon happened, it was all well and good, right? She's called herself a hockey widow.
Playoffs haven't even started.
Well, no, but she knows what's coming. And when I sit there and I'm already envisioning entire days of, there's a game that starts at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and then there's a game that starts at 10:30 at night, and there's four more in between it, and I'm going to sit there and watch them all. You
know, this whole quarantine, I've never been so upset that I can't work from home. I'm being as safe as I can. I'm wearing masks. I'm doing as much as I can. But just from an I wish I was home standpoint, man, I wish – because I really think I'm probably going to miss a decent chunk of the Flyers' second game.
You know, and
we don't know for sure because they've only announced the time starts for the first games.
It's 4 o'clock on the Tuesday for the Pittsburgh game, and then it's 3 o'clock on a Sunday.
Right.
And that's the cool part. The Sunday stuff favors a lot of people.
Actually,
as far as I'm concerned, that 3 o'clock Sunday is not really out of the ordinary. It feels like a nationally televised game.
No, that's about right. Yeah.
Right.
By the way, look for more information about some sort of special event after that game. We'll talk about it next week.
We're teasing it now, and we're working on
something. Just a little sprinkle, a little tease in there.
So I want to go back to
Let's go back to this point. Let's look at these teams.
Toronto's one of them because what I would want to do is I want to sit there the week leading up to a first round. I'd want to see how Toronto looks. It was really funny. Toronto posted a video talking about how, or someone posted a video. I think it was Bar Down that posted a video about how great the power play looked. And it's like, yes, the old 5-on-0 power play. How easy it is to move the puck when there's no.
Looks great when it's 5-on-0 in practice.
Now, don't get me wrong. The names that are touching the puck as you go through that.
Yeah.
Marner, Matthews, you know.
Toronto's definitely scary from a threat perspective.
And everybody's going to be healthy. That's the other thing. Like,
and they got the
and speaking of Austin Matthews, finally you get the confirmation that yes, what he was out with was COVID. He was out with it for a little while, but didn't really have any issues with it. Spent his 2 weeks at home like he was supposed to, and came back and is good to go.
Look at Austin Matthews following the rules for once.
And just so we know, by the way, we're going to have another thing on all the testing and things like that later on because I have some relatively breaking news that is worth.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
I say it because it is Flyer related.
Okay.
So, out of those, like, I'm gonna skip over the Islanders for a moment. Carolina to me.
I think you should skip over the Islanders forever.
Well, Carolina to me has potential to be a dangerous team in a first round, and Pittsburgh obviously has the potential to be a dangerous team in a first round. And the only thing that you would hope at that point is one that maybe the Flyers advance. So that they are like advancing the seeding, so they're
you're dodging those teams.
Six,
yeah.
Or that you get one of these upsets that means that now one is playing at 10, which means that now
everything kind of slides around.
Right, you can shift it a little bit better. So maybe
the Flyers really could play any team because none of these matchups. Like I'm looking at these matchups, and the quote unquote most lopsided is probably Carolina, New York.
Right.
That could easily go five games.
Sure,
and no one's surprised.
And here's the thing.
So any team can win any of these in any combination.
And here's the thing. I don't think the Islanders are as big of a threat as they might have been a couple months ago. We're talking from April to February. I'm talking about January, February.
We've been locked down for 4 months.
Well, yeah, really. No, so I'm jumping back to like January, February.
About 6 months ago.
Right.
When the hockey season was underway. By the way, this is the season all those coaches got fired. That whole thing happened this season.
Right.
Old
habits die hard, you know. I'm still used to talking about playoffs in April, not July. Anyway, I just don't see them as that threat, though. And the thing is that that's a first-round series that's so weird to me. Like, they're the two teams that I just don't think have the prospects to go very far.
Both teams suck. I'll say it.
don't want to say they
suck. I know you're not going to say it. I'll say it. Here's my thing. The three teams you just pointed out, Carolina, Toronto, Pittsburgh, do you agree that those are the three biggest threats? Probably.
Out of the ones that are in the qualifier.
Out of those eight?
Yeah.
Those are the exact three I said to Mike. Okay? So I set this whole thing up saying Mike and I had a conversation, 40 minutes ago when we started this conversation. So Mike and I had this conversation, and I told him those three teams. And I said, okay, those are our three biggest threats, looking at them. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh doesn't know who their goaltender is. Not reliably.
Well, I think they do. But
okay, but it's not as cut and dry as maybe it should be.
And here's the thing, and this is a great point because I heard it on the NHL Network radio the other day, because they talked a little bit about Carter Hart and going into the playoff experience and that, and they're going, listen, nobody wants to sit there and come out and say the Flyers are going to win it this year, but they even said they
would like. I'll say it.
But their point was is that like one of the analysts on there even said, I think it's coming sooner rather than later, and it's because they have the goalie.
Well,
and like without trying to jump too far and go, hey, we're not trying to say this year per se, but at the same time,
why not?
Well, because they're saying if anything, Matt Murray proved that a young goalie can win a Stanley Cup.
Sure can.
Like it is possible. It's not you need a lot of other things too. Don't get me wrong. But I, there's a lot to like about the makeup of the team and what they've done and how they've changed some things that,
Sure.
Pittsburgh's at, I'm saying that for Pittsburgh stands too, because Tristan Jarry is not exactly the, he's young too.
Right.
He's got potential as well.
But it's weird because Matt Murray has two cups, but in the regular season, he's not that good. Like if you look at his numbers over the last two or three seasons, he's been okay. He's been fine. He doesn't look like a goalie who has two cups and should have
he's league average.
A Conn Smythe.
He's league average.
Right. He doesn't look like a goalie with two cups and should have a Conn Smythe.
Right. He should have.
He should, and he doesn't, but he should. Whatever. That's not the point. Whatever. That ref should have a Conn Smythe for blowing that play dead, but whatever. exactly the play I'm talking about, too. I was screaming. Don't get me wrong. I was watching it at a friend's house, and I was screaming. Right. So we're looking at these three teams. Pittsburgh doesn't really know who their goalie is. And even beyond them, they have one defenseman.
Here's the, because Carolina intrigues me in that sense too, because
Carolina doesn't know who their goaltender is. Well, not really.
Well, it's not even, they don't even know who their goaltender is. I'm sorry.
It's Flyers legend, Peter Mrazek.
I can't see him being that guy, like to carry them that far.
Right. So Pittsburgh doesn't have a goalie. Carolina doesn't have a goalie. So the only team that really legitimately threatens me as a Flyers fan in the first round is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Okay, because you got Frederik Andersen, who is a legitimately talented goalie and can give you a good performance on any night.
I can't wait to watch Sean Couturier try to shut down Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner. I'm really legitimately excited as a hockey fan to watch that battle.
So speaking of him, by the way, because I loved this the other day.
I'm sorry. Who?
Auston Matthews.
Okay.
I love this one, and some of the media availability the Flyers have done during the early part of training. Mike Yeo spoke, and he's been coaching the defense, talking about the fact that they've given and Phil Myers opportunities against like the Ovechkin line or the Auston Matthews line. He picked those two names out and said, like, we've put them up against those guys because, A, we believe in them, and, B, we want them to get that experience.
Auston Matthews is a problem, man.
Right, but think about the success they had against those two teams throughout the year, and you gave those two a shot against the best players they have to offer.
I cannot wait.
And you beat Washington three times, lost to them once in a shootout, and you beat Toronto twice and lost to them in a shootout. So every game you were in for the duration.
I've said some pretty bold things on this show before.
Right.
Bet your house on the Flyers win in the first round.
I mean, I
now feel compelled to state that you should not bet more than you feel comfortable with. And you also should not bet if you are not of legal age to do so, and it is not legal in your state. Right? Please play responsibly. Yeah. Whatever you are comfortable betting on the Flyers winning in the first round, because it's happening.
I felt that way in early March, probably right after they beat Washington for the third time.
When it looked like they only had 13 regular season games left before the playoffs?
It was a few more at that point. It was probably about 15 at that point.
Okay.
And they played two more games, won one of them, and lost one to Boston that they were
2-0 to Boston, a great game.
But yeah. They were in it the whole way. And
phenomenal hockey game.
And Boston was just on just as much of a roll at that time as the Flyers.
Yep.
So it's not that big of a deal.
The best team in the league on the hottest streak of the season. Yeah.
Right. Like you can't deny that.
But no shame in losing that game.
And I looked at that time and I'm like, it feels like, you know, it feels like it was all about making the playoffs, but now it feels like it should be about at least making the second round.
If the Flyers lose in the first round, it will be a disappointment.
I think it will, yeah.
Another conversation I had with producer Mike the other day was expectations around this team. And he tried to argue with me that expectations were about where they were the previous season, the last season of the Hextall regime. And we agreed that those expectations were that the Flyers would finish somewhere between 6th and 10th in the conference, maybe threaten to win a first-round series. Kind of the mediocrity that we've become accustomed to.
Right, but obviously, the goal was it's preferably in the top eight where you say we made the playoffs, but
right.
You really don't have profit.
But I'm talking about the realistic, where you looked at this team and thought, yeah, they'll probably finish here. And Alain Vigneault,
right.
In addition to Kevin Hayes and Matt Niskanen far outplaying expectations.
Right.
The Flyers were a top five team in the league for large stretches of the season. I don't know if I can definitively say that they were definitely there all year or if that's a little too homery. But it certainly seems like they were at the very least in that conversation.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing I'll say about, again, Alain Vigneault and what you said about Matt Niskanen and Kevin Hayes playing exceeding expectations of their own. I think the key to saying they exceeded expectations is not necessarily to point it out in a sense of offensive.
Defensively, and how they were used.
Well, how they were used, the overall defensive play of this team and the change they made. Let's put it this way. Let me bring up something that I wrote about earlier in the week because I saw it, you know, it was from a clip that Ian LaPerriere had the quote talking about Alain Vigneault. It was right before, by the way, which we haven't mentioned all show. I can't believe we haven't said it yet.
Jack Adams. I thought about it earlier. Finalist. Congratulations, Alain. I know you're not going to listen to this,
but well-deserved, as it should be.
You know, supremely.
He was a deserved finalist. And he's
talking about these expectations. Absolutely.
He's going up against two guys that we had mentioned previously when we had that discussion about who could be there. Out of a list, close to 10 coaches that we said you could have put on that list. I mean, it was pretty
right.
Close. There was about 10 coaches in the league.
Definitely.
Which think about it, because you just made the joke about the firings of all the other coaches. It's like there was probably close to a third of the league that was worthy Jack Adams finalists and another third of the league that got fired this year. So what does that say?
Crazy.
Back, you know?
2020,
nonetheless.
2020.
This was right before he was going to be named a finalist for this award. And Ian LaPerriere reveals something to us that he says cracks him up. And that is that they use the exact same system that they use under Dave Hextall. It's just enforced a different way. There's an accountability that was not there. And Everybody responded. I think I don't doubt that. You know, system is system. What you do on the ice may not be all different. I mean, let's put it this way. Do they run the power play almost the same way? It is the same setup. The approach up the ice is relatively the same. It's the drop pass back at center ice. They use that still.
Everybody loves that one.
Right.
I know the Toronto media loves when the Maple Leafs use the drop pass.
But isn't something about it more effective from an energy level? You have to do it with much more conviction than maybe they had to under Hextall. You can't just expect it to be, hey, look, here's the blue line. It's wide open. Just go ahead and glide on in. No, you got to go in there aggressively.
Sure.
And I think they do. You know, and obviously the big difference was the care to the defensive zone, the attention to the defensive zone.
And a lot of that, like we talked about, comes back to Matt Niskanen and Kevin Hayes. You are just a better defensive team than you were 15 months ago.
You don't jump over half of the league in penalty kill overnight. You know,
no,
you just don't.
No.
And they almost essentially did. You know, you don't go from being 25th, 26th in penalty kill to 11th.
Right.
And for a large enough portion of the year, 7th or 8th, I mean, they were in the top 10 for a good portion of the year.
Well, if you think about the three biggest changes from 18-19 to 19-20, mm-hmm. We talked about Kevin Hayes. I'm talking about on ice changes.
Sure.
We talked about Kevin Hayes. We talked about Matt Niskanen. And we've mentioned Carter Hart.
Right.
Those are your three biggest. I know Carter Hart came up midseason and played a bunch, but I'm talking he was your starter this season. You were relying on him for the most part, splitting time with Brian Elliott, of course.
Right.
But those three things all help your team defensively.
Sure.
Because we talk about that. I know I've talked about it a lot because I was there, but that the 5-on-3, mm-hmm. right? The home opener.
Right.
Sean Couturier takes a bad penalty. Okay, cool. We're late second period. I think it's a 1-0 or 2-0 game. It's a tight game.
It was 1-0.
It was 1-0.
Yep.
Several minutes left in the second period. Sean Couturier takes a penalty that he didn't necessarily agree with. He goes to the box. So we're thinking, oh man, we got a penalty killer down.
Right.
We're in trouble. I'm already thinking, oh, this is last year's Flyers team. Sure. They're letting up a goal here. It's 1-1 going into the third period. Anything can happen. So they settle in for the draw. Kevin Hayes breaks his stick. That's a penalty. He's going to the box now. And we signed him to be the penalty kill guy. We were only two games into the season, so I didn't know how good he was yet. But they signed him to be the penalty kill guy. What's he doing taking a penalty? Now we're 5-on-3 and we're missing two of our best penalty killers.
Yep.
What do they do? Carter Hart makes the save of the year. And that, man, I don't want to sit here and say that that's a sign, but man, didn't it feel like that was a sign? Doesn't it feel like Carter Hart was saying, hey, listen, even when our back's against the wall, even when we've made some mistakes, I got you.
I don't know that it felt like a sign in the moment. I think it is a sign now that we look back on it.
Because I'm sure gonna claim that I thought it was a sign in the moment.
And here's the thing, because I think it happened more frequently after. Because the thing that you say about last year's team, where you're right about it, is that
that team buckles.
Not only do they get scored on that particular situation, but then they don't even have the third period. They do. Hey, here's two quick goals, and
right.
You're not even thinking about the result.
Then they challenge the goal and get a bad penalty and end up losing the game.
Right, something like that. Like, something would happen. You know what I mean? Like, there'd be something. You know, it's always with that. It's never the other part of it where it's like you kept waiting for in a lot of those. And you're right. The other thing to think about is it's two games into the season.
We don't know what this team is yet.
You don't even know anything yet.
And the only other game they played was in Prague.
Well, and let's be real about that first game in Czech Republic for a minute. It's a 4-3 final. They have a couple really good periods, but enough of the third period, or at least, you know, there was a late second period goal and then the late third period goal as it's come close. You were kind of sitting there going, when the goalie gets pulled for Chicago, it's coming, isn't it? You know, here it comes.
Flyers looked a little fat and happy.
Right. Like, you just had that sense, like you're waiting for, and it was refreshing that they came out.
Oh, I was getting ready to hear Chelsea Dagger again, because even though it was a Flyers home game, they played Chelsea Dagger when the Blackhawks scored.
But it was, exactly, well, hang on a minute. They did, but at the same time, they played a song that none of us knew was going to be the Flyers' goal song at the time.
Which I think they
take with them to Toronto. Like, I hope that that's part of the atmosphere, is that when you score, if you
want individualized goal songs.
I know you do for that, but I'm saying, like, I hope that what they do for the teams is that if you're the home team.
Oh, they have to.
Give it the flavor. And you're not sounding a horn for every goal scored, and you're not, you know, like.
It's just home goals. Team.
Well, I heard something about this.
It's 2020. Like, how hard is it to download them all on a soundboard? It's not.
They did it in Czech Republic.
Right. I could do it in 10 minutes, and I don't even know how to work my computer.
but nonetheless, they said the Rangers are doing this, as I heard, is they're having their fans record.
Yeah, I heard this.
The impression that I got is that all the teams are supposed to be doing this in some way, which would make a lot of sense. I mean, I don't know if I'd rather not pump in crowd noise.
No.
Just listen to the play. But maybe they're still – even if it's not distracting, it's not terribly distracting. Like, I was watching – the Phillies played an intra-squad game, and they pumped in crowd noise after a double or something like that.
Okay.
And it wasn't terribly noticeable.
We'll see.
Well, to me,
we'll see.
It didn't take away from the rest of the broadcast.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Like, at the end of the day, what are we really going to hear? We want to hear the players for sure, but we're going to hear the broadcast.
I want to hear Travis Konecny and Kevin Hayes with microphones on.
And let's wait. The good news is that, as far as I know, at least for the first game, it's going to be locally televised. That preseason game or that exhibition against Pittsburgh can be locally televised. I assume I'm going to have Jim Jackson on my television.
I hope so. And
he's not going to be in Toronto.
Right. I don't know if you listen to the most recent Spit and Chicklets, but Paul Bissonnette talked about the fact that local media will be calling games from the press box. Or he said he's going to go to the Gila River Arena press box to record.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if they're all doing that or, you know, whatever, but
it would be a cool idea to do it that way, because
putting Jim Jackson in the Wells Fargo Center press box would make for a pretty neat camera shot early on, right?
The only thing that I can guess that would be different about it is that not all of these arenas have what the Flyers arena has, and that is that the Wells Fargo Center butts up to the NBC Sports Studios.
So right.
The fact that they can get to the studio from there, like, oh, they have a studio that's in the same building.
Turns out being owned by the network is a good thing.
Right.
That has its benefits.
I think they're going to end up doing it in a studio and then just being part of the atmosphere like that. Like, hey, we're doing pre and post game shows here too.
Right.
And they're right here and there's nothing crazy about that, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure they have a plan.
He's talking about because Biz is talking about for in Arizona, right?
Right.
I just don't see them having, like, what studio are you going to, you know?
That's fair.
Like, I don't know where Fox Sports Studio would be. And if and regionally, too, there's differences in certain places like that, too. Like, you know, your football team doesn't necessarily have to play in the same place that the baseball team does and the hockey team does. And you're bouncing around. So maybe your studio is somewhere in the middle and you don't even want to travel that far. We'll just go to the arena. It's an isolated place, and we're by ourselves.
But yeah, either way, it's going to be strange hearing Jim Jackson, but not having him actually be at the games.
Well, it's going to be. But I'm really interested to see what they do too, because I'm going to make the assumption. I would assume it's this way that Keith Jones is going to be there for NBC.
I imagine Nashville. You would think.
So I'm guessing. Yeah. So I'm guessing Bill Clement's going to do analysis and color for him in that situation.
It could be any number of people. They might put some sort of crew together. They might do something totally different for this. They might change it up completely. Who knows?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, and I don't, again, they're only taking such limited personnel, so I don't know who's physically going.
I'm not sure if anybody from media is going to be included in the 50 personnel.
Here's the thing about...
Except for the social media.
Right. They have one content creator, as they called it, or whatever.
Sure.
They also have,
which, by the way, Philadelphia, if you haven't filled... I'm just saying I'm available for the month of August and September.
I'm going to guess
it's filled. But listen, I have a little bit of a platform here. I got to shoot my shot, right?
Right. Well, I'm taking a guess that the content creator is also going to be the PR director.
It's going to, yeah.
It's Zach. Because that's where I've been getting all the
emails. He's going to have the Twitter account.
He's going to handle most of it, and that's going to be the way it's going to be. Like, I don't think it's going to be anything crazy otherwise.
No. And
so that being said, where was I trying to go with this? Oh, so in terms of sending, like, baseball is allowing the radio guys to go.
Oh, baseball is allowing a lot of things. They're allowing the players to go.
I almost wouldn't be surprised if they did let radio go, because radio, you need to be there to describe stuff a little differently.
I get it.
So for radio, they might send the radio crew. So that would cut down on who you would find in the studio at home in Philadelphia.
Although NHL is a little bit of a different. The hockey is a little bit of a different, you know, it's a different animal. You might just have a feed that is a top-down feed.
I haven't heard anything about it, but, like, right. Baseball's allowing it for that, so maybe radio gets to go, but TV will do it from here's the feed and here's the video, and nothing's different about this.
Well, either way, we will we'll get answers to a lot of these questions in 9 days, because the Philadelphia Flyers, like we mentioned before, will be in the first game back. And we'll get a lot of the answers to these questions, and we'll really see what the playoffs are going to look like. We're going to kind of get the first picture of what we're expecting for the next 2 months.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, because we have been going for quite a while here, you mentioned that you had a testing numbers update for us. Do you want to hit us with that before we get out of here?
It's not really a testing numbers update, but basically the biggest piece of news that's come out of Flyers camp so far, most of it's been routine, most of it's been usual, and today they put out a group list. I get the group list every morning to see who's in what groups. I'm not really you know, I'll inform you, like, my media access is not the same as the guys who are physically there every day. There's a couple people who are physically there who are able to go.
You mean Claude doesn't call you every morning to check in and let you know how it's going?
And I'm not on the Zoom calls. I am getting the transcripts, but I'm not on the Zoom calls specifically.
Okay.
Which is fine, because at the end of the day, I'm getting the list. I'm getting any media memos. I'm getting any group setting, like group lists. I'm getting all that stuff.
And I'm sure. At least they're doing their best.
So the group list came out for today's practice, for Sunday's practice. And Group A was a 12 forward, 8 defenseman, 2 goalie group that very much resembled a game roster. The only exception was Michael Roffel was in Group 2.
Okay.
Now, granted, Group A, Group B practiced at the exact same time.
Yeah, who was in Group A that you think would have been left out for a Michael Roffel if this were to mimic a roster?
Nate Thompson.
Okay. I just didn't know exactly who the 12 were in Group A.
I'll read off the list for you because it's not going to take me too long.
Yeah.
Konechny, Hayes, Couturier, Pitlick, Lawton, JVR, Giroux, Grant, Thompson, Farabee, Aube-Kubel, Voracek.
Yeah, it's Thompson or Aube-Kubel, most likely Thompson.
I think Aube-Kubel's got a spot, though.
Yeah, I think he does, too.
Okay, and then the defensemen were Meyer, Sandheim, Haig, Provorov, Niskanen, Goss, Despair, Friedman, Braun.
It's about right.
And the goalies were Elliott and Hart. So that's probably as close to a game roster.
It looks like we're getting there.
And for what it's worth, because I had this up too.
And the reason we brought this up in relation to the virus, by the way, is because a lot of our fans will know that Jake Voracek was deemed unfit to play on Saturday, or unfit to participate.
Right, and he did practice on Sunday, so he is back, so there's
right.
No fear here, and I have his reasoning. He actually gave the reason why
he was unable to. So, okay.
So Voracek, by the way, was back on his typical line with Couturier and Giroux for practice today. They swapped out the second line slightly. For most of it, it's been Farabee, Hayes, Konechny. It was JVR, Hayes, Konechny today.
Okay.
Farabee practiced with Grant and Pitlick.
Which I expected them to experiment with JVR on the second line in Farabee's spot anyway.
And then Lawton centered a line with Thompson and Aube-Kubel.
Okay, Raffle slides in pretty easily for Thompson Raffle there.
Raffle was on the technically the fifth line with Frost and Bunneman, and then Andreyov and Rubsov and Torinsky were on the next line.
Is there any chance that Frost impresses enough to get a spot?
Torinsky was quoted during his Zoom call portion. They've been going to just about every they get 4 players every day.
Okay.
And we're now, what, almost a week into it. This is day 7.
We're getting a lot of guys.
So every day it's somebody different. And Torinsky's quote was basically, "It's been a dream of mine since I was a kid. Every kid dreams of playing for a Stanley Cup. If they need an extra guy to help the team win, and that basically sets you up for what's coming. Like, I'm here when they need me."
He knows he's not on the 12.
He's not the usual guy, you know, and that's fine. Like, I think that Bunneman knows that, because Bunneman was told the whole time, be ready, but it doesn't mean you're in. Be ready.
Do you think there's any chance that Frost is impressive enough to leapfrog Michael Roffel for that Nate Thompson spot?
I don't know.
Probably not. Honestly, I'm looking at Morgan Frost, and I'm thinking about deep in a series. Say game 5, game 6.
Yeah.
Somebody goes down and you need to add somebody to your forward core. Morgan Frost brings the kind of speed in a game 5 or a game 6 that could really turn the tide of a series. I could see him as an arm out of the bullpen type thing.
Here's what I will tell you. If I had to draw the line, and I, like, if I drew the invisible line after,
as you hold your pen up and draw a line.
This little line, right?
Yeah.
And said that's the top 4 lines are my lineup, and the bottom 6 players that
are out
forwards are not. Then out of the 2 that are not in, or out of the 6 that are in there, I can see Raffle playing, obviously, and I can see Frost playing in the round robin.
Right. Like, oh, for sure, as part of a rotation,
interchangeable pieces. I'm going.
I think
see Frost getting into a game or two.
Honestly, I think we'll see all of those guys get into at least one game. I think Alain Vigneault will do enough looking and rotating. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
And for what it's worth, by the way, defensive pairings were essentially exactly the same again. So Provorov, Niskanen.
I really won't be surprised if you see a game where, like, Andy Andreyov is in and Jake Voracek's out and Andreyov's just on the first line just because they're doing the preseason thing where they're filling out the roster.
So, by the way, to give the update on Jake Voracek. So first of all, Alain Vigneault was quoted afterwards that in his return, you know, that he looked very good out there, like the energy and enthusiasm he brought to the group. That's about
imagine all. If he's like, yeah, you look like you had a bit of a cough, maybe a fever.
And by the way, Vigneault also added at some point in time they're going to work on special teams on Tuesday. Tomorrow, or, yeah, Monday is an off day, complete off day, nothing.
I knew that, yeah.
So special teams work will begin on Tuesday.
Apparently. And then I believe Friday is off-ice workouts, so they won't be on the ice on Friday either.
Jake Voracek was gloated. Jake Voracek was gloated. He goes, I felt good. Why do you ask? Holy blank. To keep it family friendly. You guys make it like I'm dying. Everything is fine.
If you don't follow Jake Voracek on Twitter, if you're allowed to, if he hasn't blocked you, it's a fun time.
Voracek said, you have to protect the player's privacy. Not everybody needs to know. The problem with this world today is everybody needs to know everything. There's nothing wrong with some privacy. He does that also follow up with, it's our health. If you want to share it with someone, share it. So in other words, he gave his own update. And the reason he did not participate on Saturday is his test result was delayed.
Okay.
His test result was delayed, then came back inconclusive. So he had to retest, and he then retested negative. He's fine.
And I think at this point, it's worth mentioning that apparently the alleged source of all this is there was a flight over from the Czech Republic that included Jacob Voracek and Jacob Vrana and who was the other one? David Pastrnak.
Yeah, but I say David
Pastrnak. And I think a couple other players. And somebody on that flight ended up testing positive. So all these players kind of went through precautionary procedures and they all got tested and there were a couple of inconclusive results. And for what it's worth,
Voracek misses one day of practice. He's participated in the other, I guess, what are we up to now? 4 on ice days.
Right.
I think it is, or 5 on ice days now, technically. Or yeah, 4 out of the 5.
Right.
Is what it is. Pastrnak, as far as I know, has practiced once.
Yeah, I think he's been out since then.
Participate for the rest of it. Like,
yeah,
that's much more concerning than, hey, here's a guy who practiced 3 days in a row, then they had the off day, practiced again, and then he's unable to participate on Saturday, but he's back on Sunday.
And of course, part of this return to play agreement includes an agreement where all injuries and illnesses will all be under the blanket of quote unfit to play. So the league or teams will not be commenting on any individual absence.
Right.
Obviously, if you see a guy break, you know, God forbid you see a guy break his leg, you can kind of draw some conclusions. Right. But beyond that, the league isn't going to really be commenting on much if a player is missing as part of the no penalty opt out and all the stuff that went into the CBA and the return to play agreement and all that stuff.
Well, and at the end of the day, like, the first thing that people thought of when it was, here's an absence, is, oh, no, it's
COVID.
And you don't know at this point whether that is tweaked a little something, need a day to recover, I'm taking the day off the ice. You know, the thing to me that was going to be the most important was if he wasn't in the building, per se.
Right.
And we don't know, and again, we don't even know that part of it, but if he's in
the right, once a player is unfit to play, they're under a veil of secrecy until they return, basically.
And as much as it's unfortunate to not be able to distinguish between
it's the only decision the players association was ever going to agree to. It would have been an absolute non-starter if they tried to disclose any sort of medical stuff during this.
Right. So bottom line is, and then here's the other best part of it. We are, as of Monday morning, it's a week into this, right? No, a week into this. And they've had, to this point, 7 days completed. 6 of them were on ice days. And Voracek's the only player who missed a practice, period.
And then his next result came back negative. Right. So, like,
found out the reason is because he had a delayed result that then came back inconclusive. He's not allowed to go on the ice if he doesn't have a definitive no, like definitive negative. And he gets the negative test by retesting later. Okay, great. He retested. He's negative. So to this point,
we have had no issues, knock on wood.
Single positive test out of this thing.
Knock on wood.
Followed all the rules,
yep.
And they have come back and had a full week of practice like this.
And I hope that everyone is continuing to follow the rules and that they safely get into the hub. That will be next Sunday, which, by the way, is when our next episode will be, because we're back to every week. I said it at the top of the show, but I'm saying it again here. So if you're excited about that, make sure to let us know about it on Twitter. We're at YWT Podcast. If you look on the rest of the socials, we're either at YWT Podcast or at You Would Think or something in that neighborhood. Look us up. We'll pop up. You know the drill. Kevin is at Kevin_Darso. We will be back next week. And the week after that, the Flyers will be playing.
Right.
9 days from now, from recording, probably 8 days from when you're listening.
There is a game line.
There's a game. There's Flyers hockey. And not only is it Flyers hockey, it's Flyers Penguins. And we are 2 weeks ago. We are 2 weeks away, 2 weeks to the day from the first game that quote unquote counts.
Yeah. Not only is it Flyers Penguins in 8 days' time from when people are probably listening to this, but it's Flyers Penguins at 4 o'clock on Tuesday, then 2 more games after that, then a full day of games.
Insane.
And then day with 3 more. It's going to be great. I'm going to have the best 3 days that I've had in a long time by doing that.
Tell you. I mean, you just got married.
Well, that was obviously fun too. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about
the best 3 days, huh?
Well, no, you know what it is? Those days, like the day of the wedding, the honeymoon, you're away. You go somewhere else to do something that feels different. These would be the best 3 days I've had just sitting at home that I've had in the longest time.
Okay. I'm glad you got yourself out of that one.
Just sitting at home. I mean,
it's going to be great.
Because I've cut down on TV typically over this entire quarantine.
Oh, that's out the window.
TV as much. And I guess I got to get myself
8 hours a day. Get ready.
Sitting there for 8 hours a day. You'll be pushing 12 when we're on at its peak, you know?
I can't wait. 5 or 6 games a day. It all kicks off with the pre-postseason starting next Tuesday. Flyers, Penguins are the first game back. We'll be on Twitter talking about it at YWT Podcast. Make sure to follow us over there. Don't forget to find us on at Sports Talk Philly on Twitter and at SportsTalkPhilly.com too. All our articles get posted over there.
You know what, Kyle? This is the best part about the game coming back too, is I got to dust off all of those graphics that I use over at Flyerdelphia during.
Oh, and I've seen it in person, kids. It's a production.
What did we say we're talking about? It's been 4 months, over 4 months.
And you might have to make some new ones. You got one for Andy Andrioff?
I probably don't have one.
There you go. You might have to make a new one. But all right.
I'm not going to worry that much about if Andy Andrioff has a graphic.
Oh, I can't wait till he plays the first preseason game and scores right away.
Hey, guess what? Derek Grant and Nate Thompson were here for a week, and I had ones made for them. You know, like,
you got about a week before game starts, so get working on Andy Andrioff. And until next week, we will be back right before Flyers hockey is back. And until then, we'll see you next week.